Welcome back to Puckcast with Statsman and AJ, RotoWire's fantasy hockey show. Hello, friends. I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario. You can follow me at Statsman22. We'll give you a reminder about that later on in the show as well. My co-host is AJ Scholes, a great follow at AJ Scholes, 2-4, based in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, very close to RotoWire headquarters over in Madison, Wisconsin. All right, partner, before we do a sweep of our 32 teams, we want to take a look, since it's the mid-season point in the NHL for most teams. They will have reached it or passed it by the end of this week for sure. Let's take a quick look at the standings and do a quick snapshot about what teams might be thinking of, whether they're in the top half or the bottom half, and maybe a playoff preview outlook. For instance, in the Atlantic Division, the Boston Bruins are playing otherworldly. They're at a 32-4-4 mark, AJ. 68 points. It's on pace for the best winning percentage of any season in the modern era of hockey. And the Maple Leafs trail them by 11 points. The Bruins actually have a game in hand, too. Leafs are pretty much locked into second place because Lightning trail them. They could flip between now and the end of the season, of course, but it looks like that's the first-round matchup that these teams will face again, replaying what they did last year in that seven-game stretch. Then there's a team that disappointed so far, the Florida Panthers. I wonder if you think they're out of the running with 42 points in 42 games played, and the rest of the teams probably don't factor in. Maybe we can give a nod to Detroit and say, oh, sure, maybe they have some games in hand. But what say you about the makeup of this division and surprises maybe?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Florida being not in the mix up at the top, we obviously knew it was going to be close. At the top, and it, you know, probably would have been if Boston didn't play quite this good. Obviously, you know, Toronto and Tampa are pretty close. If you give Tampa two more games, they could get four more points and then just be three back there. So, of course, you know, at the point of the season we are, it's hard to say that hard to say that some teams would be out of a playoff spot at this point. But you know, you're looking nine points back. The Leafs or the Lightning have three games in hand. Buffalo, who they're tied with, also has three games in hand. They're certainly not in a good spot. And then if you look at, you know, just the goal differential for the top part of this league, even Buffalo sitting plus 17, and then Florida on the minus half of that equation at minus seven. So it would take a pretty significant run here down the stretch for them to get in. I wouldn't feel super confident if I were them right now. Obviously, the wild card is, you know, maybe a little bit closer to that, but we can touch on the wild card race, I think, once we take a look at the Metro. Paul, I'll lead us into that
okay.
One. And we got Carolina at the top, 57. Pretty close race with the New Jersey Devils. I think if there's maybe a surprise team in this mix, it might be New Jersey, maybe not a huge surprise, but maybe outperforming. I don't know if you would have predicted top three at this point in the season. Rangers at 53, Washington at 52, sitting technically outside of that lock spot for the Metro. The Penguins at 48, and even the Islanders at 47. The Flyers and Blue Jackets rounding out the top here. So, Paul, what's your analysis of kind of the Metro, how that shakes up? And I'll let you take first crack at what do you think the wild card in the East here looks like as well.
Well, first of all, when you said about the Devils, neither one of us picked them in the top three. I checked, we were picking them fourth or fifth. So they have to be rated as a big surprise so far, but it's on merit. Their offense certainly is taking and bopping, and the goalie tandem is looking pretty good too. So they're full value for being in second place, but it is really tight, as you suggested. Right now, Washington and Pittsburgh hold down the two wild card spots, and the Islanders are also in the mix too. I think you can pretty much count out Philadelphia and Columbus as also runs in this division and non-playoff participants. So be curious to see what kind of moves they might make to change their roster up before the trade deadline. But Carolina Hurricanes putting it all together. They got Max Pacioretty finally playing some games too to bolster that offense. And you talked about the plus minus, the goal differential. There are six teams in this division that have scored more than they've given up to give you a sense for the quality and the depth of this loop. And I think it could definitely fluctuate because from second place, well, from first place to sixth place, there's a gap of only 10 points, AJ, and that's pretty tight. I think we're going to see it move around, and maybe injuries and the health of some of the teams is going to really tell the tale.
Well, and I'll just add, Paul, looking at the wild card breakdown here. Right now it's Washington, Pittsburgh making it in. You mentioned the Islanders, the Sabres, and Panthers would be 6 points out of Pittsburgh getting that last wild card spot. So if you had to take a guess right now, I would probably say Pittsburgh. And then I might say Buffalo could get in the mix. Washington's been playing a little bit better. But I would say maybe Pittsburgh, Washington, and Buffalo, the three teams I think are vying for those two spots. What about you, Paul?
Yeah, I think both teams are going to come from the Metro Division, AJ. When I look at the Sabres, they've got 42 points. By comparison, the Capitals have 52. I mean, there's four games in hand for the Sabres in that
That's eight race. Points right there,
eight
Paul.
8 points, but they don't matter until you win them, buddy. So I'm looking at that as quite a gap, and Washington has really fortified themselves. I mean, I touched on it in the morning show that we did at DraftKings, how they got three key forwards back in the fold, and we'll remind our listeners about that development a little bit later when we go in depth on teams. I think the Penguins, too, are going to factor in. They're set at 48 points. Sabres only have one game in hand, and they're 6 points behind there. Awfully tough to make up a margin like that as the season gets older. So it's up to Buffalo to really go on a hot streak to close that gap sooner rather than later. Otherwise, they'll be on the outside looking in. The Central Division of the Western Conference, AJ, a similar tale when really you look at the top six teams, considering Colorado right now is sixth in that division. They have three games in hand on Dallas. They're trailing them by 13 points. That's quite a margin, and it's attributable to the fact that Colorado's just been blasted by injuries all season long. They'll be hard-pressed to make the playoffs if they don't get their act together soon. Nashville is just ahead of them, but the Preds are playing really good hockey. The Blues have seemed to sort out their defensive situation a little bit, and they're getting good offense, but they've played more games, sitting at 45 points. The top of the division kind of sets themselves apart. Minnesota, Winnipeg, and Dallas, I think, will be the top three teams in this division. I don't know that Colorado can catch any of them, but they'll have to put a streak together. That's my sense. Arizona and Chicago well on the outside looking in.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that full assessment there, Paul. I don't, Colorado may, it's hard to count them out, right? They're just such a good team. And you're right, they have been really hampered by injuries to open the year. So, and again, putting it back to goal differential, I know that's not the be all end all, but it is such a telling stat. They're actually plus one, and that's ahead of Nashville and St. Louis, who are both ahead of them in the standings. So, if they can continue to kind of add to that goal differential, I think you'll see kind of a corresponding rise in the standings there. So I think they're probably put themselves in enough of a hole that we're talking wild card potentially for them. But I wouldn't completely count them out tracking down, a Minnesota or possibly even Winnipeg for that third spot in the Central. Looking at the Pacific, we'll just count out, to steal your term, Paul, the also-rans of Anaheim with 28 points, San Jose with 34, and even probably Vancouver with 37. Right. From there, we get a little more competitive working our way up. Edmonton at 45, Calgary at 47, and then our three current playoff teams, Seattle with 52 points, the Los Angeles Kings at 54, and Vegas Golden Knights at 56. I think what you're going to see most from this one is very similar to what we're expecting out of the Metro. I think it's going to be a dogfight down here to the end. Any one of these teams is in a position to take that top spot. I mean, you talk Vegas has two games in hand on Los Angeles, so they could spread a gap there. Seattle has two games in hand on Vegas, meaning they have four in hand on the Kings. So there's a lot of hockey to be played between these three teams. And certainly, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, hard to count out Edmonton at any point. Calgary, I would say maybe underperforming where they were last year, but they're still in a spot to put themselves in it. So that's kind of how I see the Pacific, Paul. What's your take, and how's this wild card shaping up?
Well, there's five teams separated by 11 points, AJ, and the teams in the wild card right now in the hunt are Calgary and Edmonton. Who's going to disqualify those two teams at this point in time? You know that they're both going to look to fortify themselves. I heard recently that the Oilers particularly are burning the phone lines, trying to find more defensive help. So you can bet that they'll be active at the trade deadline. And Calgary, I think that their additions have had plenty of time to try and fit in. Hugo has has got some traction in that regard. I think Uyghur's a little bit of a step behind in terms of his fit with the club. I thought they were both going to be outstanding additions, and I think before the end of the season we'll see that. So I don't know that I can discount either one of them from this playoff race. Seattle, to me, is the shocker. We thought they'd be a good team, but I didn't think they'd be this competitive. Outscoring a lot of teams in the league, too, is the big surprise here when you consider that they got a lot of other teams' cast-offs, second and third line players, and they've turned some of them into first line players with extra ice time and opportunity. So they're really in the hunt. They could even win the division if Vegas falters a little bit. Kings are a little bit of a surprise too, because they had defensive woes, but they've outscored their problems, and the goaltending is starting to sort itself out, as Phoenix Copley has been a surprise addition to bolster that aspect. That's my sense there. Do you think both wild cards will come from one division, or will it be one and one here in your assessment when you break down the wild card for us?
I mean, I'm just I'm not sold on assuming Colorado's out of it. I'm not saying you are, but just,
I'm not.
Colorado, I think, you look right now, they're just 2 points back. I mean, this is such a tight group. Edmonton at 45, that's tied with the Blues. Nashville, Colorado, all right in that 2 point range. So I would expect we'll probably see Colorado push for it. And it could go either way. I think it could be two Pacifics, two Centrals, or one of each, obviously. So it will be a tight race. And I would be shocked if we knew who this wild card was before, last game, last day or two of games in this Western.
Absolutely right, partner. Well, let's swing into our look at the 32 teams, and we'll have to touch on some of those also-rans, maybe highlighting some players that might be on the trade block for those teams, beginning with a look at Anaheim. I like what I see out of Mason McTavish being in the first-line role here, though, I got to say.
Yeah, looking at Anaheim, some injury, probably good news right now for them. Trevor Zegras was under the weather for yesterday's practice, but it looks like he's going to play today, most likely. We haven't gotten confirmation of that yet, but he was on the ice for the game day skate. Looks good to go. Max Jones is going to suit up. He's been out of action since about mid-December, so about a month sideline for him. And then Isaac Lidstrom is going to travel with the team. No guarantees that he'll be in the lineup there, but when he'll at least be with them for an upcoming road trip as well. So some good news on the injury front for them. You mentioned McTavish, 3 goals and 3 assists in this last week of games since we were last with you here on podcast. And so a good week for him. But overall, getting a little bit healthier than they have been. I think, obviously we're not expecting them to make the playoffs or anything here, but they're with some of these guys back, I think they're going to be a much more challenging team to get past for the rest of the Pacific.
And I think that same statement holds true for Arizona, AJ. We've seen the goaltending had been solid until the last couple of weeks. That's where I'll start with my notes here. Karel Vemelka had been heroic for much of the season, but he's really hit a first slump in the 2 years that he's been backstopping this club. Maybe the rubber is getting to him. 5 straight losses, consider this. 23 goals against, a save percentage of .861 in that stretch. I think he might be broken with all the work that he's had. And Connor Ingram is back in the fold, and maybe a good time to give him a run of games just for Vemelka to catch his breath and maybe reload the energy component of his game. And I think things will be right in the Nets. But interesting development up front. For most of the season, Travis Boyd had held a scoring line center position role, which I didn't really understand. Seeing him as a bottom six player in the Maple Leaf system for a couple of years and in the minors, I don't know how he graduated to that opportunity, but maybe it was a telling statement on the quality of the peers around him. But now that they've got Barrett Hayton in the first line role, he had a nice week with 2 goals and 2 assists. And Nick Bjugstad is a big guy, AJ. From having seen him with your Penguins for a while, he's a big body. He can play a two-way game when he's on top of his game. I don't know that he can be a big-time scorer to merit his top six role, but he is the second line center, and relegating Boyd to a third, more appropriate third line role. That's a key development here, I think, because they're going to get more mileage out of Hayton and Bjugstad than they would whatever out of Boyd. I don't know why they waited this long, but they're getting it right now. And another guy that's moved down to make room for the top six is Nick Ritchie. They entertained him as a top six forward for a while, but now he's in the bottom six as well. Lawson Crouse and Clayton Keller, probably the two signature pieces offensively, getting a good run here in scoring line roles, and they're making good with it. Nick Schmaltz has had a good season in terms of being healthier than he's been in the past. He's got a total of 19 points in 24 games played, so he's had about 2 months where he hasn't missed any hockey except for one game. That's probably the longest stretch he could say in the last couple of years. So some positive news in terms of the way this club is made up, but they're really hurting in the nets with Hromelka getting tired, it looks like to me.
This past week, we saw David Pastrnak kind of knock on the tap on the shoulders, rather, of the top of the league in terms of the goal scorers and the Rocket Trophy, saying, hey, don't forget about me here. 7 goals in the 3 games this past week. That's got him back into second in the goal scoring race. Obviously, Connor McDavid still up top. We've talked a ton about Tage Thompson and Jason Robertson. But yeah, Pastrnak just coming roaring back this week to put himself in the mix there. Brad Marchand with a real good week, 3 goals, 3 and assists. Trent Frederick picks up 3 points. Bit of an injury knock. Jake DeBrus got hurt in that Winter Classic. Originally, it looked like it maybe wouldn't be too bad of an issue, but they actually put him on long-term injured reserve. He's got both a hand injury and a lower body injury. So that means a minimum of 10 games or 24 days with him on the shelf. So he'll be out until mid-February. So kind of a big blow there for DeBrusk. And I think it's going to mean more opportunities for Craig Smith, who is currently set to play with Marchand and Bergeron, while Pastrnak kind of anchors that second line with Pavel Zacha and David Krejci. They've got Taylor Hall down on the third line. So they've got some really spread out combinations. And of course, the goaltending continues to be phenomenal. Jeremy Swayman, 2 wins and 2 starts this last week. 9.48 was the save percentage. Linus Hallmark got 1 start, secured a victory in that one as well with a 9.33 save percentage. So really, again, just everything continues to roll for this team. I don't know right now. There's not seemingly a good way or a formula that anybody has really figured out how to stop them. They score a ton of goals while also stopping you from scoring goals your way. So I really don't know how anybody's going to knock them off. They are going to be a challenge the rest of the season.
No question. You wonder if there's ever going to be a blip on their schedule with a couple of losses that we talked about in a week. It hasn't happened yet. Only 4 to date, which is remarkable. The Sabres can't say the same. They've lost 3 of their last 5. They're giving up a lot more goals lately, AJ, and that's a bit of a telltale sign for me. Seattle and Philadelphia beating them in the last 2 starts. They've averaged over 4 goals against in their last 4. And even a high-scoring team like Buffalo is not going to get 4 every night. So that's a concern unless they can put a lid on it somehow. And one guy who's trying his best at both ends of the ice to make that happen is Rasmus Dahlin. He's insinuated himself into the defense scoring leaders all of a sudden with a very nice week where he totaled about 8 points, 3 goals, and 5 helpers last week to draw within 9 of Erik Karlsson, who's holding down the top spot in the league in terms of defense scoring. But after that, Dahlin sits with 46 points in 38 games on a career best season. He's getting over 3 shots on goal per game and doing it at both ends of the ice with a physical presence that's caused him to be a leader on the team in hits with 58 and blocked shots with 67. So he's clearly doing it all at both ends of the ice for Buffalo right now. And good news there. And this team is not just a one-line club, though, AJ. We've talked about Tage Thompson, Alex Tuck, and Jeff Skinner all season long, but they're getting good mileage out of Dylan Cousins, who's really emerged as a solid second line center there. It's going to be a theme that we touch on, I think, throughout the course of this show, with a number of teams really boasting the fact that they have 2 solid centermen that can score. Playmaking winger like Vinny Hizenstroza, also an asset. And Rasmus Asplund, they got to upgrade on that position, I think, to round out the top 6. That's maybe what separates some of the contenders from pretenders. The top 6 needs to be more solid than maybe Hinostroza and Asplund. 2 spots the Sabres might look to upgrade there down the stretch if they can.
Well, Max Pacioretty exploded onto the scene in his Carolina debut this past week. Didn't get any points in his first game, but six shots on goal was kind of an indication of what you were going to expect. And sure enough, three goals through the other two games over this past week. So bringing exactly what they brought him in to do. Plenty of goal scoring. That should really continue. I mean, the shot totals are really high right now. Power play minutes are right there as well. So everything that he was projected to do and really gives them just a ton of options here. I mean, you've got Pacioretty on the top line with Aho and Seth Jarvis. Svechnikov now on the second line with Stastny. They've kept the Jordan Staal line pretty much the same because Staal's been leading the way that way on that one. And then, of course, that leaves them with a fourth line right now of Tuvo Teravainen, Jesper Kotkaniemi, and Stefan Nosen. Like, that's just a ridiculous group. Let's not forget, Andre Kasha is still on IR and could be activated at some point as well. I'll be honest, I'm not sure where he fits into this lineup. Maybe on that fourth line, but this is just a super talented group, you know, and we can't forget the defensemen either. Brady Skjei with 4 points this last week, Pesci with three assists, and oh yeah, they also have a big bearded beast on the back line with Brent Burns there as well. So this is just a ridiculously stacked Carolina team that's also going to get more help potentially in terms of net mining. Not that they really need it, but Freddie Anderson looking like he could be back at any point. I don't know what that means for the other two guys in the Nets in terms of, you know, what the breakdown of who's going to start when and where is going to be. But, you know, their guy Cucci dropped three straight this last week. So maybe he heads back to the minors and then Freddie Anderson takes over between the pipes.
And that's would be quite a fall from grace as a guy who's potentially the rookie of the year. A leader in the clubhouse almost at the halfway point. Kochetkov has had a very nice first half of the season, but they're paying Freddie Anderson a lot of money, and they want to see how much he's going to give them back if he gets the chance to play. It's not going to be once every four games. In Calgary, you know, there's a couple of disappointments on this roster, AJ, that we've touched upon, maybe only briefly, but Andrew Mangiapane signed a big dollar contract at the start of the season, 3 years at over $5 million, and the return has been leaving the club wanting. He's only got 19 points at the halfway mark. That's well below what their expectation was, and he's been relegated to a third-line status. And, I mean, we've touched on the trade that they made a number of times, thinking that Mackenzie Weegar was going to be a kind of a tie-breaking element here. But he's only got 10 points at the halfway mark, so well below what was expected of him. Add in the fact that another defenseman has underperformed, that's Noah Hanifin. He was on almost a 50-point streak pace last season, finished with 48, I believe. He's going to be on about a 35-point streak with only 17 at the halfway mark to date. And they both ceded the first-line power play role to Rasmus Anderson, who has held them off and had another fine season. He's got 27 in 42 games, so on pace for about 55 again to solidify his hold on the top role there. But the way they've got this lineup configured now has me scratching my head. Not only is Mangiapane out of the top six, but Milan Lucic is in the top six, AJ. This guy has been a bottom six guy ever since he was in Calgary. He's got a few points going for him recently, partnered with Huberto and Kadri. He and Kadri, in fact, have formed a pretty strong friendship off the ice, and they're together on the ice here around Jonathan Huberto, who's starting to get some traction. I wonder if that line is going to stay together for a long time. I could see then flipping Mangiapane for Lucic to get bolster the offense. But maybe this is an attempt to stretch the roster and get more of a balance through the top three lines anyway.
Over in Chicago, there's some injury concerns that are lingering for them. Alex Stalock is expected to still be out tomorrow. He's under the weather, so they called up a goalie from the minors to back up Peter Mrazek. Patrick Kane is not expected to play tomorrow either. Still dealing with a lower body injury there. They might get Mackenzie Entwistle back as kind of a bottom six producer for them. I think the biggest kind of storyline out of Chicago recently is that they essentially acknowledged, or Domi did essentially acknowledge, that he was signing a one-year deal here to basically be traded at some point. That was basically came out this past week, but now he's not so sure. He seems to be happy in Chicago. If I'm the Blackhawks, I'm saying, hey, we got to get something for you, buddy. But, you know, give us a call in free agency. We'll talk in the off season here once you go and get us some draft picks. But we need you to leave right now. So we'll see how all that shakes out. But yeah, kind of an interesting note that Domi expressed some desire to stay in Chicago if that's possible.
And in Columbus, it's much the same story where they're trying to audition players to see who will fit in longer term. Emil Bemström has been promoted to a right wing on the top line with positive reviews in the recent games. He got a couple of points last week, three assists, I think. Kirill Marchenko is another guy who's getting a good run on the offense in the right wing spot, challenging Bemström for some ice time, but likely locked into more of a third line role here. But he piled up some points last week too, totaling 4 goals, in fact. So good offense from a couple of guys that are auditioning for more of a responsibility here. And even on defense, Gavin Bayreuther has tried to get some traction. I mean, after the injury to Zach Werenski, they're looking for answers here, and maybe Bayreuther is one of them. He got a couple of goals last week and looked fine in a regular shift. So they've kind of stretched their defense to the max with a lack of really experience there. The only experienced piece in the current six-pack is Eric Gudbranson. And instead, they're giving guys like Magnus Bjork, Andrew Peak a run. Peak is getting a look in offensive situations too. Could be a good find if he finds his offensive game in that role, has a chance to shine there longer term.
We mentioned the injury concerns that have plagued Colorado. They're not totally out of the woods yet. They have gotten Nathan MacKinnon back in his 5 games since returning from injury. You're talking 3 goals, 2 assists, including a ridiculous 11 shot game. The power play minutes have been pretty heavy. Multiple games since he's come back, where he's logged over 6 minutes of power play ice time. So that's certainly going to help them. The problem is they've got a bunch of injuries elsewhere and have had to pretty consistently roll with 11 forwards and 7 defensemen. Recently, Gabriel Landeskog, Jared Bednar said, is nowhere near returning. That's certainly not encouraging. He said today or yesterday about Val Nichushkin that he has really no idea on how long it could be. He basically said it could be tomorrow, it could be weeks from now, because it's kind of a pain management issue. He's fine for the most part, he said, except for when he has to put on his skates. It causes some discomfort on the injury there. So that's certainly not what you want to hear from that standpoint. So the forward group remains really, really thin because they're so hard up against the cap. With guys like Landeskog and Nichushkin basically out indefinitely at this point. You've got Bowen Byram still sidelined. Josh Manson is out as well. And so really they are without a lot of wiggle room, and they've needed it this past week. Alexander Georgiev, 1-2 was the record. 3.36 was the goals against average. He needs to be way better than that as they try and ride out these injury concerns. So they're going to need a run. They're going to need better goaltending. I would say his goaltending probably fine if they're already atop the league or at least in the playoff hunt here for a spot, but they're chasing right now because in a large part due to MacKinnon's absence, and they don't have time to waste with his inconsistencies.
And in Dallas, it wasn't so long ago, AJ, that we thought that their offense was thin, but they got enough offense now to fulfill 2 solid lines and then some. In fact, Roope Hintz has missed some time. He's about ready to rejoin the lineup. They didn't really miss a beat offensively. Wyatt Johnson has stepped up to chip in. Mason Marchman's been a discovery that we talk about and Leaf fans lament because we basically gave him away. And now look what he's doing there, fitting in a role that Toronto could really use. Jamie Benn having a career return to norm, I would say, after a couple of down seasons we've touched upon. And all that's behind the top line that continues to tick and bop right along. And Jake Oettinger has firmly established himself as a top 5 goalie in this league. They've kept a lid on the goals against all season long. And when the offense chips in as regularly as it does with a lot of secondary scoring, this looks like a very tough team, a tough out anytime they hit the ice.
Red Wings are getting healthy and could similarly be a very tough team to play right now. They've got Robbie Fabry back from another knee injury. He's got 2 goals in 3 games since returning Tyler Bertuzzi back on the ice for the first time, played yesterday. Didn't get any shots on goal, which is obviously a concern when you consider Detroit put seven goals up and Bertuzzi didn't get a single shot. But again, give him some leeway, just back from a pretty extended absence, last played November 30th. So they're starting to get healthy here. I'm still somewhat befuddled as why they continue to carry three netminders. There's two teams in the league doing that right now. I just don't think that's a recipe for success, having so many guys in the room there. If you need to trade somebody, you know, get that taken care of. Maybe they don't want to move Hellberg back to the minors. But I don't like carrying three goaltenders. It seems like a waste of a roster spot to me.
Well, and in Edmonton, they have to be scratching their heads that they're really relying heavily, obviously, on the twin towers of their offense. McDavid and Draisaitl are continuing to lead the way, but and Hyman has been caught up in their wake and having a career season offensively. It looks like he's got three more goals to the mix, but they got a nice boost from Kyler Yamamoto, who's been on the fringe of top six involvement for a couple of years now, and he needs to continue to do what he did last week and score a couple of goals to merit consideration on the top six. Clint Costin is also a bit of a placeholder. All that's because of a guy like Jesse Puljujärvi. I think they're running out of patience with this guy, AJ. He's playing out the string on a $3 million cap hit, 6'4", over 200 pounds, some great speed, and looks like some good offensive skills are in the package. Just hasn't shown well despite prime time opportunities, and now he's relegated to bottom six roles. And all that said, he might be running out of time, and I don't know that Edmonton will welcome him back on another deal next year. Instead, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has been playing the part of a good soldier. He's getting well compensated, but he's on a third-line role trying to drive that unit with Matthias Janmark and Warren Fogle. Warren Fogle himself, a guy who's touched on the top six. So another team that's looking to stretch their roster into a three-line offense, but really relying on the two guys up front and still waiting for Jack Campbell to start earning his money. And it's going to be paramount that he gets his act together because Stuart Skinner is now on the IR. He's on a personal leave of absence, moved to a non-roster position, in fact. So not too much clarity about what's going on there, but it puts the white light back on Jack Campbell, and it's time for him to start earning that salary right now.
Well, speaking of earning their salaries, we are probably going to get a pretty heavy share of Sergei Bobrovsky in Florida moving forward. Spencer Knight popped up on injured reserve with an undisclosed injury yesterday. We haven't seen any real details from the team yet on the nature of that. They called up Alex Lyon to serve as the number two, but I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of Alex Lyon replacing Sergei Bobrovsky between the pipes. So it's going to be heavy Bob for them moving forward. And they'll have to sink or swim with their $10 million man there. In terms of offensive production this last week, it's a lot of the guys you expect to be up there. Tkachuk, 4 points. Ekblad with a pair of goals. Barkov and Montour with a goal and three assists apiece. So getting production from the offensive guys, production from some of the defensive guys. But the story for the Panthers right now is the injury to Spencer Knight and the fact that Sergei Bobrovsky is going to see the bulk of the workload moving forward.
And goaltending is part of the story over in Los Angeles, but it's not Jonathan Quick or Cal Peterson. It's Phoenix Copley who's been the headliner. His goals against is almost a full goal better than both goalies in the roster list in Los Angeles. Of course, Cal Peterson's in the minors now. Jonathan Quick has a 340 goals against average to show the comparison there. And L.A., we mentioned, is vying for a top spot in their division and doing so on the heels of a 9-3 stretch in the last few weeks here since the mid-December. And they've been really consistent in terms of keeping the lid on the goals against, but it's their offense that's had an uptick as well. And that comes to me as a bit of a surprise, AJ, when you consider that they're missing a couple of key pieces in that offensive mix. And those guys, Arthur Kaliev and Trevor Moore, will be lost for a little while yet. They're getting good mileage out of guys like Adrian Kempe and Alex Iafallo. Victor Arvidsson is a guy that they brought in to score some more. Anze Kopitar and Philip Deneau holding down the center roles. So they're looking for a guy like Quinton Byfield to take the next step, AJ. And for a time, he was auditioned as a third-line center. He's getting a bit of a run with some reps on the wing on the top line to see if they can get some more offense out of him. He was a first-round pick a high first round pick not so long ago, and they'd like to see him take that step in his third pro season. He's only 20 years old, but they would like to see some traction from a guy who has all the tools, quite like Jesse Puljujärvi. They don't want him to turn into another version of him, but a lot of guys are actually have their oars in the water to buy him some time with some really good offensive play of late.
Some good news for the Minnesota Wild. Matt Zuccarello was back in the lineup after a two-game absence. He scored a goal last night, unfortunately, in a losing effort for the Wild. They got Brendan Duhaime back as well, so they are really about the healthiest team in the league right now. Hopefully I'm not jinxing them there. Getting production on both the front end and the back end, Kirill Kaprizov with 4 goals in 4 games. And then you've got Kalen Addison actually leading the way in points over that four-game stretch with 5 points as well, 3 of them coming on the power play. So really, I think this team's issue is more the defensive side of the puck. They've had a lot of goals going into the net, a lot of saves being required. The game last night, you set, had Marc-Andre Fleury facing 43 shots from the Rangers. That's a pretty heavy, significant workload for him. In fact, in each of his last 4 games, he's faced a minimum of 31 shots, a couple 40-shot performances in there as well. So they're going to need to get better in front of their nets and figure out how to not really hang these netminders out to dry.
AJ, remember it wasn't so long ago that Jesperi Kotkaniemi was in my doghouse being an overrated first-round pick? Well, I got another one for you, and it's Jurag Slafkovský. People are going to say, oh, but he's only 18 years old. He's only 18 years old, but he's getting a regular shift still on this team, playing lots of power play minutes. But get this, 5 shots on goal in his last 11 games. That's just not cutting it. And so there's talk about moving this guy into the minors to buy him some time to really find his game and get his traction as a pro, because year one has been an unmitigated disaster in terms of him not showing a thing for me. And I mean, I don't want to be overly critical, but I guess I'm sounding like that. But he was the first overall pick, and he has all these attributes that I thought he was going to hit the ice and hit it running. It's not unusual for first-year players to struggle, but he's really redefining that term for me. And in the meantime, they're not getting a lot of mileage out of their leadership right now. Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield have really cooled off in the last couple of weeks, and the offense has really suffered because of it. And that's no wonder that this team has lost 8 of their last 9, AJ, with one exception, a 5-4 win over St. Louis. But otherwise, they're being outscored and outscored badly in a lot of games. And to further make matters worse, in the net mining situation, we thought that Jake Allen would have a tough time staying healthy behind this weak defense, and that's come to pass. He's now dealing with an injury, a shoulder injury, that's keeping him out, and that's going to put more pressure on the defensive side of the puck for this team, because Samuel Montembeau is now pushed into the top role, and Caden Primo is up from the minors. None of those guys are going to be in the Vezina Trophy discussion later this year at all. So they got a problem.
For New Jersey, they got back Andre Palat this past week. No points yet in 3 games, but certainly throwing his body around, dishing out plenty of hits along the way. And I would imagine that the scoring is going to come eventually here. Nathan Bastian also traveling with the team, so that's a step in the right direction for them as well on the injury front. Same with John Marino. So either one of those guys could be back in the lineup sooner rather than later. Mackenzie Blackwood is trending in the right direction here. He's not played for a couple of games due to a hand injury, but seems to be ready to at least serve as their number two. But I don't know how much action he's going to see. Vitek Vanecek, 3 wins this past week, just 7 goals allowed. The .926 save percentage is going to keep anybody else from really pushing for a shot here. So while it seemed a year or two ago that Mackenzie Blackwood was going to be the netminder of the future for the New Jersey Devils, that certainly has not come to pass, and it would appear as though Vitek Vanecek has taken over as the netminder long-term here for the Devils.
And Nashville, a team that rolls into Toronto here tonight on quite a streak. They've won 5 of their last 6 games, and they're getting outstanding goaltending from UC Saros, who's playing at the top of his game and saving 95% of the shots that he's faced in the last four games, including a 60-plus save effort in a victory earlier last week. So they're getting solid net minding. They have their offense is pretty much ticking and bopping along. Forsberg leading the way there with two goals and one assist, and Parson and with four helpers. But I'm concerned about one guy that I thought had found his game last year, and that's Ryan Johansson. Because for a couple of seasons on this show, we have maligned him against his contract, saying it was in line for the Jeff Skinner Award, which we give out to the worst contract in the league for a few years. But Skinner's righted himself, so maybe we got to rename it the Johansson Award, because right now he's back down where he was for a couple of seasons, with last year being the blip in a positive way. He's back and regressed to the point where he's really looking like one of the worst deals that's out there, and not living up to his end of the bargain at all. And they're trying to find ways to move him around the roster. He's not always in a center position, not always in a top six position, because they have other players that have to move around. But Mikael Granlund has been moved off that position, and Johansson's back in a second line role. Granlund been a good soldier here for a long time, been a leading scorer here periodically for this club, and Nino Niederreiter is with him on that third line. So another team that's trying to stretch things out. Credit to Matt Duchene for holding his end of the bargain offensively with a similar contract. At least he's on pace for like 65 points, which is bare minimum for the money that he's getting, but he's done it 2 years in a row now after some bad seasons for himself. So one of the two guys got it right. If the other guy gets his act together, this team could be something to fear down the stretch, because goaltending's in place and the defense is really rock solid for me.
Semyon Varlamov was back from injury for the Islanders, got a start this past week, less than stellar, giving up four goals on just 21 shots against. This team is really solid defensively, and so you would imagine if you're only facing 21 shots, you're expecting your goaltender to at most probably give up one in that type of game. So a pretty disappointing outing for him, and really kind of a disappointment all around for the netminders. Sorokin went 1-1-1 in three games. The statistical numbers for him, 9.22 save percentage, 2.30 goals against average, not too shabby. But the fact of the matter is the record is going to be all that counts when you're in the hunt for playoff spots here. It looks like they might get Kyle Palmieri and or Adam Pelich back in the next week or so. Both guys have been on IR for a while and could certainly help in some of those avenues. Barzal, their leading scorer this past week, 4 points for him. Pageau with three, Casey Cizikas with three. But I think that speaks a little bit to the fact that in four games, Jean-Gabriel Pageau, their second leading scorer with just 3 points, they're going to need some production out of somebody else. I think it's a theme that we're going to continue to say all season long for the Islanders. They rely on defense and they do a good job of it, but still somebody's got to score a goal or they're going to be losing a lot of low scoring contests this year.
Well, I'm finding a theme, AJ, of teams with third lines that are producing of late, and that's causing their team's fortunes to rise dramatically. The Rangers are a team that benefited from that in the past week. They went 3-0, and Jimmy Vesey and Philip Hedel were two-thirds of that third line that led the way. Hedel with three goals and Vesey with 3 points, just on the heels of signing his extension with the Rangers. He's a happy chappy. And then Keandre Miller and Adam Fox are two young guys that are carrying the load offensively and defensively for this club. And we're not even talking about a guy like Jacob Trouba. So you know that they've got a wealth of options in the defense core offensively. And then a guy like Braden Schneider, who's plying his trade successfully since he joined the NHL very recently, a highly touted rookie. I like this guy's game. I think he's going to be a hard rock and a real key piece of this defense going forward. And of course, Igor Shesterkin, very happy to be behind all that group. But that third line driving traffic, offensive traffic to the Rangers, is a real luxury when you consider they've got a good number of guys ahead of them that have put the puck in on net on a regular basis all season long.
On the injury front for Ottawa, Matthew Joseph won't play tomorrow, I think is their game. Sorry, won't play tomorrow, but seems to be heading in the right direction. He's practicing and able to take contact with the team. Nikita Zaitsev is moving in the right direction, but he won't be in action for their upcoming three-game road trip. So going to have to wait a little bit longer to get him back. But in terms of this forward group, it has been all Tim Stützle this last week. 6 points for him, including four goals in three games. The next closest, Brady Tkachuk, with just 2 points. So pretty heavy load of Tim Stützle this last week, at least for opposing teams. I think we'll continue to see him settle himself in more and more as the leading producer on this team, which is saying a lot when you have Brady Tkachuk and Drake Batherson available as well. And let's not forget about Claude Giroux. But I think as we continue on and Stützle gets a little bit more developed, more used to the NHL level, is going to just be a bigger and bigger contributor. It's hard. It's easy to forget that he is just 20 years old right now after going, third overall back in the 2020 draft.
AJ, while we're recording this live, I just saw a note about Chris Kreider of the Rangers. He's going to miss tonight's game. So for listeners who are looking to put their DFS lineup together tonight, you won't be including him in the lineup. There's no news about what exactly his illness or ailment is. And in his place, Alexis Lafreniere gets another chance at a top six role. Over in Philadelphia, this is a team that we have panned for much of the season, and it's just because they just can't seem to get on an offensive roll to stay in touch with the five or six teams that are ahead of them in the standings. They have won five of their last six games, but maybe the highlight of the season came in a game against Buffalo this past week where they won 4-0. That was on the heels the day after maybe the worst game they played of the season, a 6-2 loss against the Maple Leafs. So that's kind of the way it's gone for the Flyers. It's testing John Tortorella's patience, but at least he can point to the fact that things are looking a little bit better on the whole in the last couple of weeks, and that's because some of the kids are delivering. Morgan Frost is a fixture now in the top six. He's not going anywhere. He picked up 4 more assists last week. Kevin Hayes, despite being in Tortorella's doghouse, chips in with 4 points. Travis Konecny is a guy who's an interesting piece for me, AJ. He's a part of this team's leadership, the way I see it, but maybe a trade chip too. A lot of teams would like to have his feistiness in the role in their lineup, and he's one of their leading scorers on the season. But he now is playing out a $5 million contract in the next couple of years, so it's a kind of an affordable hit if you're looking to bolster your top six and maybe you can work something out with the Flyers, because I'm not sure they're going to be competitive in the next couple of years, and who knows what kind of a haul they can get for one of their top scorers right now. So that's me kind of fanning possible trade rumor situation for a guy who's got 42 points in 35 games. He'd be a hell of an addition to a team that's looking to bolster their offense. In any case, that brings us to a point in our show. On a weekly basis, we take a pause here so that AJ can get his thoughts together. I know he's got a lot of duty with the copy on reading on the Caesars copy, and a reminder for our upcoming teams that we got to still cover, including the Pittsburgh Penguins. So we'll give him a chance to catch his breath, and we'll take a commercial break right now. Let's take a pause to give our sponsors some airtime. We'll be back with some more news and notes from around the league. You're listening to RotoWire's podcast with Statsman and AJ.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Thank you. right, we're back. AJ, over to you for the read about the Caesars sponsorship and the reminder of how to get in touch with us. We had a couple of interesting comments come our way. Players in fantasy leagues looking for advice. We are welcoming those kinds of comments all the time and any questions you might have. But AJ, what about Caesars?
Well, it's NFL postseason time, so of course there's plenty to get in on the action there. Obviously, NHL, NBA, both in full swing as well. So it's the best time to try Caesars Sportsbook. Today, anyone who is at least 21 years old and in a licensed Caesars Sportsbook state can create a new account and redeem Caesars Sportsbook promo code ROTO15. That's ROTO15. The promo code gives new users a risk-free first bet up to $1,500. Visit Caesars.com/sportsbook or download the Caesars Sportsbook app today. And don't forget to use promo code ROTO15 when signing up. As Paul mentioned, if you are looking to interact with us, find the show live when we share it. You can do that by checking us out over on Twitter at AJSchulz24 for myself, at Statsman22 for Paul. And we'd love to interact with you, answer any questions you might have as you're managing your hockey team or just hockey or sports in general.
AJ, the Pittsburgh Penguins have righted themselves a little bit from the last couple of weeks, and I'm sure you have some positive things to say about them for a change, because they've disappointed you for the last couple of weeks overall. And instead, now they're talking about a 2-game win streak.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than a not 2-game win streak, I guess I'll say that much. But they continue to be without Tristan Jarry, Chris Letang still away from the team right now. Ryan Poehling, Jeff Petrie, and Josh Archibald all on IR as well. So the team still a little banged up. But as you said, Paul, 2 wins recently. Casey DeSmith got pulled in their game just the other night. I believe it was last night. Dustin Tokarski comes in and they storm back for the win in that one. So really that speaks to why they need Tristan Jarry back sooner rather than later. Offensively, Gensel got going again. He had been in a bit of a slump. 4 points this last week. Crosby with 5 points. Jason Zucker, a pair of goals. Malkin with a 4-point night last night. So a good game for him. So the top 6 is doing really well. The rest of the lineup a little lacking in terms of offensive production. Not a whole lot coming from the blue line either. Of course, when you have your 2 leading offensive guys in Letang and Petrie unavailable, that is going to happen. Ty Smith stepping into the gap a little bit, 3 points this past week. And so getting opportunities with the number 1 power play unit, that's a great spot to have him. In fact, his 2 assists against Vancouver last night, both coming with the man advantage. So he's definitely a player to watch until they get one of these other defensemen back.
AJ, in Seattle, all things are good. They're on a 6-game winning streak. They laid waste to 4 Canadian teams on a road swing. That is now 5 games in a row that they won away from home. And they're doing it on the strength of a high-octane offense. Quick math tells me that they've tallied a total of 26 goals for in those 5 victories while giving up a total of 10. So you'll take that every day and twice on Sunday if you can get those kind of numbers in your favor. And it's they're full value for being in the playoff hunt because of the depth that they've had offensively. But they're getting sparkling net mining from Martin Jones. And I believe in the 8-year history of the show that I've never said that in the same sentence, my friend, because he was toiling unsuccessfully in San Jose for a long time, but now he's in a more structured circumstance and he's rewarding this team for the faith that they showed in him and sitting with a 19-5 record. I can't believe what I'm seeing from him so far this season. So kudos to them and kudos for him for lifting his game. And they're another team that's doing it on the strength of an offense that's 3 lines deep. They picked up Eli Tolvanen off the waiver wire, and he's fit in a third line role, AJ, and solidified that unit. Since joining the club, he's got 3 goals and 2 helpers in 6 games. So it just seems like everything they touch offensively is turning to gold. And your friend and mine, Jared McCann, continues to move around the roster. I'm kind of curious to follow this guy. It's like a game of Where's Waldo this week. He's playing second line minutes on the right side beside Alex Wenberg and Jaden Schwartz. Schwartz is another guy who is offensive first. And so they're doing it there with 3 lines deep. And Matty Beniers is having an outstanding year. And if a goalie doesn't win the Calder Trophy, he's going to be my pick to win that. Now I'm on side with your preseason choice in that regard. Vince Dunn also making the Blues miss him a lot in terms of the role that he's factored in offensively. Consider 8 points in his last four games, AJ, running that potent power play on pace for a 60-point season on the blue line, which would be far and away his career best in the NHL.
You have to feel for the fans of the San Jose Sharks, and if you have season tickets, you might be asking for your money back when you consider on home ice, they're 4-11-6 at home. That's the worst home record in the league right now, and yes, that's worse than Chicago, Anaheim, Arizona, Columbus. Columbus actually pretty good at home. They've got 10 wins at home. They're just abysmal once they leave the state of Ohio. But yeah, so back to San Jose, just really subpar at home. The net mining has been bad as well. Both Kaapo Kähkönen and James Reimer saw action this past week. Both posted save percentages below 88% here. Goals against averages were 3.47 for Kähkönen, 4.12 for James Reimer. We're going to get more James Reimer tonight. And so we mentioned this off the top, and I'll probably bring it up later. But right now, if the Sharks are playing, it's probably a game worth targeting the over in terms of betting because they are getting some offensive contributions. You saw this past week, LeBanc with 4 points. Barabanov with three, Timo Meier with three. So they're producing a little bit of offense, but the goaltending has been really bad. So maybe target the over in these San Jose matchups.
In the St. Louis situation, I'll start with the goaltending, AJ, because I'm really confused by the way that Craig Berube is using his tandem. In fact, he's leaning on Jordan Binnington, and at a time where Binnington can't seem to keep the goals against under wraps, he's given up at least three in his last five starts. Mixed in there is a shutout win that they had over Minnesota. He didn't play in that game. Thomas Greiss did. Greiss has only played 11 or 12 games this year. This is a guy who's capable of playing 35 to 40, but I think it's a case of really wanting the club to help Jordan Binnington find his way. But in a competitive situation, as they are fighting for a playoff spot, I don't know how much more rope they're going to give their presumptive number one starter, particularly if when he's spelled, the backup can put up a game like that. So something to watch there in the goaltending situation. They're missing Vladimir Tarasenko. I think I mentioned that last week. He's going to be reevaluated in a few weeks, but he's not going to be back in the lineup soon, putting pressure on the offense. But the offense is not the problem. They're getting good mileage out of, again, two solid scoring lines. They can't say they have a third one intact, and that might be a bit of a concern. They might want to find some pieces there. But without Tarasenko and O'Reilly, that's two-thirds of what will be another third scoring unit. So in the meantime, Braden Schenn has had to step up his game. Ivan Barbashev and Brandon Saad. Brandon Saad has picked up his offense big time. So it's that second line that's kind of bridging the gap and holding places for the aforementioned Tarasenko and O'Reilly there.
Over in Tampa Bay, it's more crucial than anywhere else to not put this team on the power play right now. And the reason being, you look at their top five scores this past week, it's their number one power play unit. Kucherov with six, Hagel, Hedman, and Stamkos all with four, and Braden Point with three. And again, you look at the production, each one of these guys, at least 50% of their points, if not more from this past week, came with the man advantage. In fact, Braden Point, all of his points came with the man advantage this last week. And so you really need to prevent this team from getting power play opportunities as much as you can. They are just shredding teams right now in that regard. Speaking of kind of weird net mining situations, this past week we saw Andre Vasilevsky and Brian Elliott each get two starts, and it was Brian Elliott who outperformed. Now, they both went 1-1-0, but Elliott 9.14 save percentage compared to Vasilevsky's 8.60. So a really kind of weird week for them. They're over, you know, if you're looking for reasons to be concerned, the net minding, a little subpar from Andre Vasilevsky of late. He's not facing a lot of shots, so really defensively they've been pretty solid. In his first game this past week, he faced just 19 shots on goal, but he allowed three of them to get into the back of the net. Brian Elliott, similarly, you know, has looked a little bit better. He's faced a lot more rubber, though. You know, in a weird situation when they had Elliott take both games of a back-to-back. I don't believe, I'm going to circle up here real quick while I keep talking. I don't believe Vasilevskiy, he was under the weather. So that would explain it, because really weird to see a goalie take both games of a back-to-back, but still kind of some subpar performances from him. You're going to want him to be better, because right now the key to beating the Lightning would be just to stay out of the box.
And AJ, I mean, the Leafs have won six of their last seven games. The goaltenders each performed well in a pair of weekend wins. And so I have really very little concern in terms of where this team is right now. But I really wonder if they can be consistent down the stretch. That's a big question that remains unanswered, and time will tell. But for the season to date, the Leafs have to be thrilled with the fact that they combined for a save percentage almost around 92%. That's far and away an improvement over last year, and it's a big reason why they're in the top three in terms of team goals against. But the big news around town is that Austin Matthews is sidelined for tonight's game and maybe tomorrow as well. It may amount to nothing more than a couple of maintenance days, because they've had a busier schedule of late, and anytime they've got a key piece nicked, they have some latitude and some room in the standings to take care of these issues. Partnering with that is a more serious injury with TJ Brody. He's actually been put on the IR for at least a week, but even that's not as big a deal as it might have been earlier in the season, with the emergence of Timothy Liljegren, Rasmus Andersson, and Connor Timmins, three young guys that have really upped their game. Timmins, most recently, a solid addition that they picked up in a minor trade that's worked out very well for Toronto. Morgan Rielly's back in the fold, so they still have seven NHL quality defensemen that they're going to run out there, and Jordy Benn in reserve. So they can afford to deal with these injuries because they've got the depth. And called up for the minors is Bobby McMahon. I'll be interested to see what this guy looks like in the Toronto situation. He's given a third line role. He's a big body, 6'2", 205 pounds. So he'll fit in alongside David Kampf, who's about the same size. They'll kind of protect Alex Kerfoot, more of a small buzzing around type player on that third unit. And in terms of the second line, they're going to put Willie Nylander in a center position, and Pierre Engvall gets elevated. So Engvall's elevated his game in the last couple of weeks, AJ, and chipped in offensively. He's got to show now in a scoring opportunity that he fits in there. And a lot of tests going on in Toronto, and the big one will come in April. But they're just concerned right now with keeping everybody healthy and nursing these little injuries when they can.
We've talked a couple times about the Vancouver Canucks just being kind of a meh team of late, very kind of middle of the road, 4-6-0, the record over the last 10 games. So really indicative of what you're seeing there. Spencer Martin started two games, appeared in three, suffered three losses along the way, really underwhelming save percentage, .833, .517, the goals against average. Colin Dalila, not much better, although he did get the win in one of his appearances here, .867 was his save percentage. So if you're trying to do the math on that, who started what and how that all worked out, you're talking about guys coming in and getting the hook here and being replaced, and that's never a good sign for a team that wants to try and get some wins. I think we're approaching a tipping point for Vancouver, where we got to look at what sort of aspect or assets they have rather to potentially sell. You look at kind of short-term guys. They have the questions with Bo Horvat and the contract. It would be crazy to think they would trade their captain, just 27 years of age, but he is an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. If they can't get something working there, it could come into play. They have, you know, a couple of guys from there. There's not really anybody on a short-term contract on the front end, a couple minor pieces on the back end. So contractually, the only guy that looks like much of a trade piece right now is really Bo Horvat. You know, Connor Garland and Ilya Mikheyev both have another 4 years, another 3 years remaining after this season on their deals. So it would be more of a hockey move than a rental. So they're not really set up to sell very well at this standpoint, which might be encouraging for Vancouver fans. But this team needs to figure something out. Obviously, if they can get Thatcher Demko back, that would be a huge boost to this team as well. But unfortunately, at this point, it might be too little too late.
In Vegas, they finally have a lineup with it where we can see what their four lines look like if they're all healthy. Jack Eichel rejoining the fold last week. He had one really good game and one really poor one in the comeback. But bigger things are expected of him down the stretch. He's partnered with Jonathan Marchessault and Riley Smith. They've broken up a longtime line there. Willie Karlsson is in the third line situation with Kessel and Paul Cotter on the left wing there. And the second line is where I want to land, AJ, because they've gotten really good mileage out of Michael Amadio, a career fourth liner for the most part, but he's emerged as a bit of a productive piece offensively in the last couple of weeks. He suddenly got 11 points in 28 games, and he's playing alongside Mark Stone. And the team's leading scorer, who is? Chandler Stephenson. I bet you wouldn't have guessed that. But Stephenson, being one of the good soldiers here who kept this team afloat during their injury woes, sitting with 40 points in 42 games played, deserves a tip of the hat in this corner for helping this offense to keep this team relevant and now being ready to challenge maybe even for the division before all is said and done. So kudos to him. And Alex Pietrangelo, quietly on his way to another 60-point season, even though he's missed some time, is looking really good on the defensive side of the puck. Shea Theodore is a guy that they miss on the back end, and he is expected to come back in the next few weeks, but they're treading water around him as well, with the defense playing up to par and then some, holding a lid on the goals against for the most part. They had two games in the last four where they allowed only two goals against, and the offense took care of those with some high production. So with the full lineup, they have a look that should be feared by most opponents, I think, when these forwards come and get more reps under them. Jack Eichel, it's going to terrorize the league, I think, before all is said and done. I think he's been wanting to do this for a while, but good health has eluded him. I think if he gets a good stretch, you'll be reminded why he was a second overall pick not so long ago.
Over in Washington, the netminding of Darcy Kuemper has definitely been a difference maker here. You look at his record right now, he hasn't suffered a regulation loss since November 19th. Now, he did miss a good chunk of December due to injury, but that's still 11 games without a regulation loss. 7-0-3 is the record in that stretch. 1.96 the goals against average. So really a fantastic run by him. There are a couple stinkers in there. He gave up 5 to Buffalo on January 3rd, but a lot of teams have given up a lot of goals to the Sabres this year, so he's certainly not alone in that sense. I would say if there's a weak point on this team, it's honestly the offense. You look this past week of four games played over that stretch, Dylan Strome, Sonny Milano, Kuznetsov, and Ovechkin all with 3 points apiece. Ovechkin obviously being the one to score all the goals. So you would think maybe a little bit more offense out of them, but with the way Kemper's been playing lately, they haven't exactly needed it. And Paul, you alluded to this off the top. They've got Tom Wilson back. They've got Backstrom back. They've got TJ Oshie back as well. And so that's allowed them to kind of shuffle things around. Right now, in terms of the depth chart, we're looking at Sonny Milano getting a look on the top line with Kuznetsov and Ovechkin, then Backstrom centering Eller and Oshie, and then Connor Sherry, who had been getting a lot of that top line work with Ovechkin, now on the third line with Strome and Wilson. I would expect these are pretty fluid as they try and work these guys back into the lineup. Certainly opportunities there for Oshie when he first came back was on that top line. Wilson, of course, has worked in that spot before. And then, as I said, Connor Sherry there as well. Lars Eller and Dylan Strome could also flip, as Eller has been a longtime third line center for this team. So a lot of fluidity, I think, to these line combinations. And I'll just give a plug to rotowire.com where you can go and see those. Every day we update those based on their practices and how things are shaking out there. So it's something to keep an eye on to know who is playing with Ovechkin. Milano getting the look right now.
In Winnipeg, we've talked for a long time about the quality at forward, but I want to highlight a couple of defensemen that they're leaning on, and one who's had an outstanding year is Josh Morris. He's sitting with 46 points in 41 games played, easily the best that he's done in his career to date, and meriting All-Star consideration this year at least. And Neil Pionk, a little bit further behind him, he's got 19 points. He's picked up a couple of goals in the last week, so they're getting good offensive production for those two guys. And Nate Schmidt is a defensive conscience on the third pairing. So I like the makeup of the way they've got it laid out here with one quality guy on each pairing and a couple of defensive stalwarts to partner with them in Dylan DeMello and Brendan Dillon on the top two pairings. But I think they'd like to see a bit of an upgrade on the second line. Cole Perfetti's kind of work in progress. I don't know. I think you can say he's had a bit of a nice season so far with 22 points in 36 games played. Certainly in his second year, credible numbers, but they want to see more production out of that spot over time. So it's up to him to bump up that rate of production. Otherwise, that they might be searching for an upgrade at the trade deadline there because they want some more quality efforts beside Wheeler and Shifley in that spot. They have to be pleased, though, that Nikolai Ehlers has come back to the fold. 5 points in the two games since he returned to the lineup, playing on the top line with Pierre-Luc Dubois and Kyle Connor, who's on pace for a 100-point season. So a lot of pieces are in place. And for a long time, we were talking about Connor Hellebuyck doing his best to keep a career best season in place. That took a bit of a hit. His last start out, he gave up 6 goals against the Red Wings. But we'll see if that was a blip on the radar or indicative of maybe him being overworked in the last little while, because he broke a string of some really good quality starts, came from nowhere, really. So I'll have my eye on his next goalie appearance for sure. AJ, that brings us to the end of our look at the 32 teams. We'll switch our attention now to the lines, betting lines ahead of tonight's schedule. And why don't you lead us off with your outlook on the Washington Capitals Philadelphia Flyers tilt this evening?
Yeah, so the Capitals pretty heavy favorites at minus 180 on the money line, the total sitting at 6, and then Capitals on the puck line -1.5. Goals comes in at plus 150. And for me, I'm not totally certain that Washington could win by two. They, I just said good things about them, but the offense has been a little bit stagnant. So I'm a little hesitant to bet that puck line. One way to get some value out of this, you can look at the 60-minute line, which becomes a three-way bet when you consider draw. So basically anything that would go to overtime is an option there. And you can get the Capitals minus 105. So that's some pretty good value there. And so I kind of turn to that 60-minute line. And, of course, we're talking a DK Sportsbook here, but most sportsbooks out there should have various options like that. So there's always a way to find some value, even when a team's somewhat heavily favored, like Washington is tonight at minus 180.
And you know what? The Leafs are favored on the money line at minus 180. I don't quite get that, because before I even heard of the Matthews news today, and I knew Brody was out, I didn't like this matchup for the Leafs, because the Nashville Predators are a team that's got their act together. The Leafs have played well of late too, but Nashville is really riding a hot streak right now. And on the strength of their goaltending alone, I would have given them the edge tonight. This was a game that I think Saros might have stolen, might be stealing anyway. So I'm looking at the money line here at plus 155 as an attractive number. If the Leafs can keep it close, maybe they win a 3-1 game, and that might be the only way I would consider them on the puck line at plus 145. But I think that the money line play on the Nashville side is the way to go in this one.
Yeah, definitely agree. And Paul, we talked about this earlier today, this morning. It was plus 170 for the Predators. So a big difference there between the two. Speaking of big differences, you look at the Edmonton Oilers Anaheim Ducks matchup here. You've got Edmonton minus 250 on the money line. 6.5 is the total. I would expect if that goes over, it's going to be because of multitude of Edmonton Oiler goals. And you're not even getting good value on the puck line here. Edmonton -1.5 comes in at minus 110. And again, let's talk a little bit about alternate lines on most sports books. You can give up an extra goal. So if you take Edmonton -2.5 goals, you can get value up to plus 165 right now. I think that's a really good spot to take a look here. get some more value on what should be a pretty one-sided game. You could target, of course, some goal scorer props as well. I don't know if I'd go Connor McDavid tonight. Minus 145 seems like just not enough value for him. Leon Draisaitl a little bit better at minus 120. And then, of course, Zach Hyman, who actually has the most goals this past week, comes in at plus 130. So there's some options to target. But again, it's about finding value in these games. And you're just not getting it on the traditional money line or puck line in this one, in my opinion, Paul.
I think the same thing applies, AJ, to the remaining game on the schedule. Certainly a rivalry game between San Jose and LA. Anytime those two California teams get together, spirits are high in that one. And I expect the same tonight. But the Kings are playing much better hockey of late in their last 10, a good winning record, while the Sharks are at the other end of the spectrum. So to me, a plus 175 on the money line for Sharks is not attractive enough to tilt the scales. And I don't think the payoff's enough for me to get on LA at the puck line at plus 115. So I'll be going for maybe the alternate line on the over, thinking that LA's offense and the suspect defense of Sharks will go a long way to taking us over the 6.5. I might even go to the alternate line and say, let's go over 7.5 and look for a shootout and get some plus money there. Or otherwise, it's individual player props, and I might take a look at some of the LA forwards in that situation. But for me, the money line and the puck line are off limits in this matchup. So that brings us to another end of another episode, AJ, and we'll be talking a lot about trade rumors in the next few weeks, too. I'm going to leave you with a couple of thoughts in terms of trade rumors and maybe contract situation. Patrick Kane has had a subpar season, AJ. I don't think there's any shock to saying that. Our listeners who are watching the stats on a weekly basis know that this guy carries a $10 million cap hit, and yet he's going to be dealt in all likelihood at the trade deadline, and it's going to be a situation where Chicago has to take back half the contract or as much money as they can to make it palatable for whoever, wherever he goes. And the big rumor that I'm hearing is the New York Rangers. So that's point one. And then I want to get your reaction to this. Locally, there's been a scribe who came out with the notion that Austin Matthews may be willing to go less than max in terms of the money that he might be looking for in his next contract, taking a page out of the book by Patrice Bergeron in Boston, where he took a bit of a haircut salary-wise so that they could spend some money around him. I wonder if that's going to be the reality, or do you see him signing for the max in Toronto? So first Patrick Kane and then Austin Matthews, please.
Well, you know, looking at the Kane thing, obviously you can make other moves, but the NHL max for salary retention is 50%. So you're talking about $5 million to eat. Now, looking at projected cap space right now around the league, like the Red Wings, the Ducks, the Sabres, and the Coyotes are the only three teams, barring any, of course, additional moves, but the only three teams that could take that on based on projected cap space over at Cap Friendly here. You could look at current cap space, which allows you to do a little bit more, and maybe there's a few other teams, but it's pretty tight in terms of how you can fit $5 million in there. So while I agree, generally speaking, it seems like it's going to happen, it may be one of those weird ones where he plays zero games in Arizona comes through that way. So we'll have to wait and see how that all works out for him. And then as far as Matthews goes, I mean, part of me has to just wonder, like, it sounds all well and great to take a, you know, hometown discount, if you will, the team you've played with all this long, but how long does he want to continue to not make a deep run in the playoffs? Is there a point where he's going to say, all right, enough is enough. We've tried 100 different things. We've tried four or five different coaches, but they've had at least a couple different coaches. And so I think that's the bigger thing is maybe he is truly willing to do that at some point, but they're going to need to make an actual sustained deep run into the postseason if he really is going to go that route, because I just don't see a scenario where he's not going to take full market value. And that's not to say, you know, that extra deal that on the 8-year max is a big, big deal, especially when you consider what he'll be 27-ish when he signs it. So an 8-year kind of max deal would be pretty huge in that sense. And so that certainly has some appeal. There's not to say there isn't reason to stay, but to give a discount, you're going to want to do it knowing that there's something worthwhile that you're getting essentially back in terms of like a playoff team or a playoff run here. So I think the next 2 years, what happens in the postseason are going to probably determine whether that's actually true or not. I think max deal probably would be more on my mind if I was him right now, just because of the lack of postseason success.
Boy, oh boy, that's going to do for a lot of hand wringing around Toronto and their fan base in the next couple of months anyway. So I'm reading all the tidbits that I can about that whole story, but it seems like there are conflicting stories about that whole topic. So compelling situation here in Toronto, but there's going to be more of them that arise. Bo Horvat fixture in Vancouver, another one that we could talk about, AJ, the fact that they're considering trading him. They may have to because of their salary cap situation. So all that intrigue and more is coming in the next few weeks, and you're going to get our breakdown in each of those situations. So thank you very much for listening to another episode of Podcast with Statsman and AJ. Remember that, as always, we remind you that we're here to help you with all your planning for your fantasy hockey teams, and we encourage you to send your comments or questions. We had some beauties last week on Twitter, where you can follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22, and you can follow AJ at AJ Scholes24. So long, everybody. Thanks for listening.